I think that all starts with the question, why are we, why are the Rockets there? And I think why we are there is because we are there to become the best followable team and have the biggest fan base in professional cycling. That's why we exist. To get there, you need to perform, because if you have a sports team that's always losing, can be quite fun for a while. And I think all people understand that you can lose, and in sports, you cannot always win, but you need to perform. So therefore, we have a sports team that's growing over the last years. But I think in a lot of choices we make, and a lot of the output you see on YouTube or other social media channels, we try to tell an authentic, inspiring, and entertaining story towards the people.
Welcome to In Control, your favorite leadership podcast. My name is Thorsten Philipp.
Hello, and my name is Peter Trage. Welcome to our first episode in English. Thorsten, how are you doing?
Hey, Peter, I'm super good. I'm super excited. I'm nearly pissing my pants because of our first episode in English. It's when we started this thing, we decided to do this in German to make life a bit more, bit easier for us. But yeah, there are certain circumstances which makes you switch to English once you catch the opportunity to get really great international guests. Then okay, we have to go this path. And today, okay, I'm not only excited because it's English, but I'm also excited because of our guests. But how are you?
Well, I'm fine. Excited as well, I would say. We got some requests to do a podcast in English, and now finally we're there. And well, I already did warn you in the pre-talk that I was thinking about a little introduction for today. And if you don't mind, I'll just give it a try. So you know that I love sports. So today I can't help, but I need to do a sports intro. So spoiler, we're going to talk about sports. We're going to talk about cycling, and about leadership for sure. And also I'm a mountain biker. I still enjoy watching road cycling a lot in TV. Sometimes I find it difficult to understand the performance of professional cyclists. It's kind of difficult to really put in relation to normal people. And well, today with a little story, I'd like to give it a try. So first of all, I would say I'm pretty sporty, so I'm pretty fit. And not so long ago, I did a medical test that included an exercise stress test. So a electrocardiogram on a bike, Belastungs-EKG in Deutsch, in German. So basically you're sitting on a stationary bike with all kind of instrumentation attached to your body.
That's painful.
You did this. It's super painful. You need to keep a certain pace while cycling, and the resistance is increased by 40 watts every 4 minutes. And basically you ride until you fail. And well, I peaked at 320 watts. So this I could do for 4 minutes. I couldn't do 360. Okay, so keep that in mind, 320. Now you might have seen this short video clip with Tadej Pogacar, one of the best road cyclists in the world, multiple Tour de France winner. And he talks about low intensity training that he loves to do for 5 hours at a heart rate of 140. And then he's asked about the watts he's doing at low intensity. And he smiles and says 320 to 340. So I can do 320 watts for 4 minutes, and a pro can do 320 watts for 5 hours. And for me, it's pure stress, and for a pro, it's normal. And I was thinking a little bit, in leadership, I think it's very similar. Means a world-class leader doesn't live in a constant crisis mode. They have somehow reached a level where what is stressful to others for them is normal. And the difference, I would say, is not talent, but it's training. Well, I'm not saying it's good to compare yourself always with the best of the best, but sometimes it's good to get some inspiration from people that show what is possible in sports and in business. And that's my intro. So Thorsten, who is our guest today?
And actually you learn from the best. You don't have to compare yourself all the time with the best, because that's sometimes also very disappointing, but you learn from the best. And that's really something we try to do here with In Control. Well, who's our guest? our guest is, I mean, it's 14th of January and our guest today is already my favorite, my highlight for 2026. So this will be hard to beat. He's a former professional road cyclist. He's a founder of one of the most influential YouTube channels about road cycling in a language which is not so popular all over the world, I have to say. Even more exciting. And then later on, he became a co-founder of a team which is maybe the hottest project we have in professional road cycling today. So within our cycling bubble, I don't have to introduce this guy to anyone because his name is everywhere around. And I'm super, super happy that he took the time to join us today. Welcome, Bas Tietema.
Thank you for the really nice introduction. And I must admit that I'm by far not as good as Tadej Pogacar. And I think many pros are not capable of pushing 320 watts for multiple hours. But I think we have here to deal with a phenomenal athlete. So for everyone listening to this podcast, that's not normal. And I think for many pros, it isn't as well. But thank you for the comparison. And I think it's a nice way of comparing sports with leadership and doing entrepreneurial business.
Right, right. And that's exactly, I mean, that's, thank you for this phrase. And we want to, if I'm free to choose, I would love to talk 1 hour about cycling, but we also want to touch a little bit the entrepreneurial side, because with your project, it's as exciting as the sports aspect. But as we don't have so many, but maybe we have, but it's not a professional cycling podcast. Please do us a favor. Please introduce yourself to our broader audience. Who are you? Where do you come from? Where are you today?
Yeah, currently I'm still a young boy dreaming for the Tour de France. And this whole story started in 2019, where together with my co-founders, Josse Wester and Devin van der Wiel, we went to the Tour de France to experience the biggest cycling event in the world alongside the road from a fan perspective. So we were a huge cycling fans going to the Tour, and yeah, we're trying to see what you can do within the Tour de France as a fan. And we were reaching out pizzas. We were getting to know riders more and more, and we made daily episodes about this adventure on YouTube. And we started literally with 0 subscribers and 0 views. And yeah, suddenly thousands of people were watching our adventures in France. And yeah, that continued and created a media company where we were next to filming the Tour de France videos, also doing sports ourselves. We were riding from Italy back to Holland, and we captured every challenge, every video on YouTube. And on a certain moment, we believed that starting a cycling team from a fan base, and in this case, a YouTube audience, could be really interesting, because normally a sports team starts with a lot of money, starts with mostly a business case. But starting a cycling team from a fan perspective was something that, yeah, really triggered us, and we really believed it. And in 2023, we started and founded a professional cycling team. And now fast forward 3 years later, people are talking about our project as a potential candidate of riding the Tour de France. So that's a short summary of how three guys started in 2019 with a YouTube channel and now running a cycling team, company, organization. That's, yeah, becoming a bigger company.
Pretty amazing, I would say. I mean, really, really incredible story. Well, Bas, what I'm interested in, because I'm always following career path of people and basically want to know how much they planned where they actually are today. And I mean, what you didn't mention, I think that you also you've been a pro yourself, right? So you were riding also as a professional cycler. And I would say, it's quite fascinating about your story that it's simply not linear at all. So you live the life of a pro rider. You build this media platform. Today you're running your own cycling team. If you walk us a little bit through that career, I would say, which parts of that were planned, which ones just somehow happened along the way.
Yeah, if I do some reflection on my pro career, I can now honestly say that being a professional cycling is quite a maniac lifestyle, and you need to focus to train, eat, sleep, and repeat that 365 days a year, and solely focus on that. And right now, in my new phase as running this organization, I can say that the lifestyle of professional cycling was not something that suited me very well, because if I see opportunities, or I really like to see opportunities and invest and do a lot of stuff around. And that was also something that was, yeah, maybe in the way of becoming a real professional athlete, because I was riding in one of the better development teams. You can compare it with a young team of a professional football team. You are close to reaching the first elite team. But yeah, I didn't make it. And in that moment, I was looking a lot to external factors. But to be honest, I think the external factor was myself not being capable of living the lifestyle of Pogacar that's necessary to be that good. And in that phase, I was also a bit struggling in life. Okay, what to do next? Because I have a huge passion for sports, but yeah, I didn't have a real education in a specific, in a specific role. So I've been looking around for months, but then the idea popped up of creating a YouTube series during the Tour de France. So that's a bit of a in-between phase, but then afterwards, yeah, we just hit the road and it just happened with the flow. Yeah, if you can call a one-pager a business plan, then there was a plan, but I think most of the people will say there wasn't a plan at all. And I think that's, if you look to our whole journey, I think a lot of our things are not planned, but we try to do it as professional and with a lot of commitment. And I think that makes sure that it will happen. So if you do it half, or you are just, but we go all in. And I think there isn't always a plan, but if you go all in and you believe that that has potential, then it will eventually happen as well. So some people will call it luck, or you guys are always, yeah, it just happened. But I think it has to do with the belief that you have something original, or that you have a certain market that is interesting. And then we go all in, we have the commitment. And so that's our plan, to do things with commitment, belief, and then eventually we hope it will happen.
You mentioned you enjoy looking for opportunities, and that's basically exactly what you describe, right?
Exactly. And especially in the world of professional cycling, what is quite conservative, there are also a lot of opportunities as well, because we have to deal with a sport that has been there for years, and the fundament of the whole sport is storytelling and showing the sport. And ourselves, we are of a generation of 30 years old, pretty much. And I think there we also bring our generation in the sport as well. And it's not directly that we want to change the sport in many aspects, but it's just our look and our perspective on new generation sport. And I think this is happening in many cases. I think you can see it in Red Bull. You have an example with Wrexham in football. Formula One has changed a lot over the years. And I think that is just the nature of every company, that you need to keep reinventing yourself and bringing new insights to the sport or to your company.
What I want to touch upon is the business point of view. As I mentioned before, I'd love to talk with you about cycling, but for our audience and also for ourselves, comparing professional sports with business or with our business is always super interesting. And the way I got to know you in our talks today and before, I mean, you don't have to explain someone about your passion and about your enthusiasm, because that comes so natural. And that's, I guess, part of what you are, part of what brought you to the point where you are today. And you've just described it, that you're going all in. So there's lots of passion involved, the will to drive things forward. So, very much passionate about what you're doing. And we talked before, and I have a rough understanding about the money which is involved in professional cycling and the size of your team and your ambitions on a professional base. So you need to be maybe passionate, but you also need to be highly professional. And I know that you are highly professional with your team, but we are talking about millions of euros which are involved in professional cycling. And you have a team of 80 to 100 people behind you. You have just signed one of the biggest sprinters in the world, Dylan Groeneveen. And so it's already huge if you want it or not. So how does this fit together? How does this approach, okay, going all in, it's all about passion, it's all about enthusiasm, let's see what is happening, and at the same time being super professional. And what I want to say is, okay, sometimes in professional business, you need to keep a certain distance. You need to have a certain professional distance to make the right decisions, to make decisions which are not always driven by passion, but of course sometimes also by pure business figures. So how do you combine this? How does this go together in your world?
That's a really good question. I think, first of all, from the early beginnings, we are professional. I think that's necessary to make it as a YouTube channel, as a high performance sports team. You need to be professional, otherwise others will beat you and you will never make it. So even when we started making YouTube videos, what this maybe seem as something the youth is doing and it's maybe really accessible, easy content, I think even the bigger YouTube channels in the world are really professional driven YouTube channels. And I think that's the fundament of getting here. And the second question you raised, there is a lot of money involved in professional cycling, and that's correct. And I think the latest years, there's a lot of money come into the sport as well. Recently, there was a research that the average of the World Tour teams is pretty much about 30 million, and that's the average. There are teams doubling that in revenue. So that means that they are beyond 50, 60 millions. What's immense. And for us, it's really the difficulty to start at the lowest level and making sure that you are able to create that growth and to make that process from a small team to become a bigger team. And we are still by far not one of the biggest teams. And the money that gets involved is more and more partners getting involved, and with more than 80 to 100 people working for the Rockets. It's a huge responsibility, but it's a thin balance between long-term and short-term, because if maybe we could be way more sustainable if we stayed at the lowest level running on a small business or running on a small revenue, but then we would never made it to the highest level. And I think the most dangerous thing is to stay in that gray area that you are spending a lot but don't have the media value or the ROI that's necessary to keep all your stakeholders involved. So Yeah, I think you can compare us with a startup, and I think now we are getting to a scale up. But yeah, we really needed to speed up, especially in the at the starting of our organization. And that's also the reason why we invested so much in our media, because we believe that if we are capable of telling our story, then we could better spend it in our media organization instead of directly in sportive, because then you are having results, but those results are not visible, because cycling is a huge sport. But if you ask someone who is not involved in the sport, he can maybe name 4-5 races, and some of them only know the Tour de France. So then that means that only the Tour de France is important to make your stakeholders pleased. But we believe that if we have a media house and we can tell the story of three guys aiming for the Tour de France one day, that we can generate there more revenue, generate more partners, and that's how we have been growing over the last years.
That's pretty interesting, because it's actually serious business, right, that you're talking about. So I guess pretty challenging when you talk about 30 million plus for running a cycling team. I mean, that's tremendous, I would say. Talking about that team, Bas, so first of all, I've seen lots of your YouTube videos, really highly recommended to all. Follow the Unibet Rose. It's called Rose or Rose? Sorry.
Sure. Rose.
Unibet Rose Rockets. Follow them. I mean, your videos are really, really interesting. So much insight. And looking at those videos, I would say for me, this team, your team, feels very different from a traditional cycling team. It's also what you explained. I don't think in the way you race, but in how you communicate with your fans, in how you position the team, in how you build a community. I think this is really outstanding. So I would love to hear from you what you really think makes the Rockets, the Rocketeers, so unique, both in terms of business, but also for me really very relevant in terms of vision, of culture, of leadership.
Yeah. I think that all starts with the question, why are the Rockets there? And I think why we are there is because we are there to become the best followable team and have the biggest fan base in professional cycling. That's why we exist. To get there, you need to perform, because if you have a sports team that's always losing, can be quite fun for a while. And I think all people understand that you can lose, and in sports, you cannot always win, but you need to perform. So therefore, we have a sports team that's growing over the last years. But I think in a lot of choices we make and a lot of the output you see on YouTube or other social media channels, we try to tell an authentic, inspiring and entertaining story towards the people. And I think there you get to the point where we differentiate from all the other teams, where the focus is really on the output in terms of results in races or UCI points or wins. Well, we believe that we can be a winner if we reach the most people and have the most fans. And we just talked about the budgets that are involved, and we also have to play it smarter. And I think with creating a media company, comparing that to budgets that you need for the best riders in the world, you can run one of the best media teams in the world. Well, reaching and creating a lot of media value and ROI for your partners. And that's the approach we are having. And I think that's also what you see in all announcement videos we are doing, the YouTube content that we make about transfers, about all those challenges we have as owners, as a team, and decisions we have to make. And it's honestly the content I would like to see if I follow any other sport entity. And that's what we create to do. So in fact, we have two stakeholders. One of those stakeholders are the partners and the people supporting our team. And the other hand is the fans. And the partners are involved because they want to reach the fans as well. But if you make too much branded content, the fans will walk away, or they don't see it as much as authentic anymore. So it's that balance between producing the content, but also keeping making the value for the partners who are on board and are part of the business model of professional cycling. And what's super important to us is we are called the Rockets. You just called our team the Unibet Rose Rockets. And for us, it was so important to create an own name that lasts forever, because cycling teams and the business model is really driven by title sponsoring. So you are, that's also where a lot of money is involved, because in many sports, it's you get a logo, or you have your, or you can affiliate with a sport team, but it's not really common that you get into the name. It's not possible for FC Bayern Munich that it's called something completely, that it's called FC Allianz or whatsoever. And in cycling, this is the case, but that also means that it's really hard to create an identity for fans, because at one time it's called, for example, right, Sky, and then it's called Ineos, but it's the same team. And this is pretty much for every team the case. And I think we found a hybrid model with bringing in an own identity with the Rockets. That's also what you see on the buses, on the jersey, in the team name, but also creating the value with two title partners, in this case with Unibet and Rose. And how that will eventually turn out, but I think it's something a lot of teams are aiming for, because teams have nicknames, like you have the Wolfpack, Band of Brothers, the Yellow Bees. These are names for sport teams, but it's really hard to introduce it in an official way. And yeah, all those smart things, or these small things, we try to shake it up, and maybe some don't work really, or don't really work out, and some others do, and we try to open the path for yeah, others as well.
Yeah. So honestly, I mean, I think the naming Rocket is just amazing, because I also understood internally the teammates are called the Rocketeers, and I think this is way more than branding. It's creating so much identity. It's really creating culture within the organization. I can imagine.
Yeah, that's also the reason why we created it. And it's always super difficult when you are a young team to create an identity, because why the Rockets? But this was actually already a term we were using within the team, because our bikes, the first bikes, were so colorful. And you have a certain ice cream in Holland with all those different colors, from red, yellow, purple, whatsoever. So people started calling it the Rocket Machine. And yeah, then internal documents were called that way. And then when we were thinking about an identity and a more franchise name, yeah, it was pretty simple, because the Rockets were already so integrated with what we were doing.
Yeah, I don't know if you realized the huge smile on Peter's and my face when you mentioned the why. That's something, and later on you said, okay, we try to do small things, but I think these are not small things. So with each and every discussion we have with leaders around there, it's very often the why which brings people together, which makes people willing to support you in your vision as a company. And we see it, if there's no why, then companies typically fail, especially in critical times. And but also identity is super important. I mean, for you, it's maybe also important for the sponsors, but I think also for the team spirit itself, for the willingness to support each other, to go this way together with you. Identity and why is super, super essential. Thank you very much for that.
But I also must admit that with growing so fast, maybe I mention it as something super clear, but we are also struggling sometimes internally with those processes, because for us as founders, it's in our DNA. But now with high performance people coming from different organizations, it's so important to tell the why. But things like HR, onboarding, we are always going full gas to our next destination. But those kind of things are so important in a phase where you onboard people or tell the why. But also there we are improving and stepping up, and because with now 100 people, a few years we were with 10. It's a crucial part, and it's also something we are developing in as founders. As you mentioned, it's crucial for your destination and understanding why we are actually riding races.
Yep. Thank you for being so humble to also say not everything is perfect. And to be honest, if you're growing an organization from 0 to 100 people in a few years, I mean, that's tough, that's challenging. And I think
let's talk about interesting. Let's talk about growth. So, because that's something which also goes into this direction of how to combine passion and professionalism. When you are bringing in new people, when you are 100 people, when you try to ride the Tour de France, you need to be super professional. You will become big. You are already a big organization. And you told me before that in the beginning, you basically did everything by yourself, booking flights and stuff like that, but that's not possible anymore. So how does the roles change over time? How has your role changed from being one of the three founders, basically doing everything by yourself, and now being the boss of 100 people and trying to build an organization which is capable of riding the Tour de France?
Yeah, that's a process.
What is Bas Tietema doing today still?
Yeah. That's a process where you learn a lot about yourself. And in the first year, I was still riding. I was even riding within the team. And we were arranging everything ourselves. But the biggest lesson I learned is that my strength is in setting up, bringing people together, and bringing that creativity that's needed in the early phase. I think that's my strength. And with now becoming a bigger organization, and you need to manage more on daily basis, I think there is a huge role for the people we brought in recently as well, to make sure that they can really manage our sportive team on day-to-day basis on a high performance level. And I am right now, I'm 30 years old. Jos is 32. Devin is 29. We don't have a big, we don't have a track record in managing organizations of this size. And I think that's also important to bring people on board with the knowledge and with the experience where we can learn from. And that can maybe result that later on, we can also take a more managing director role and take that role as well. But I think our strength right now is where it all started. Be creative and think about the next step of our journey. And for me, I have been within the performance team. I was sports director when you are on the road. And that's still a big hobby of myself because I love the sport. I can go, I follow pretty much every race. But then you have to question yourself, do I bring the real value in there? Or could I be better looking ahead and thinking about the next step we should make as the Rockets? And so that's also my role on day-to-day base. I'm here at the training camp to bring over the why and why we started, and to shake hands with a lot of people to get them motivated and get them in the right direction. Well, our management team and the chief sports officer, that's the one that's called for managing and the responsibility for managing the cycling team in a whole. He is responsible that everything is running here on day-to-day business, and that the organization structure is there on the sportive side. So, and that also depends on budget, because in the early phase, we didn't have the budget to attract those people with a track record or the experience or people who are capable of running on this level a team. That's also now the phase where we are, that we prefer to invest on specific position in capable people instead of running it with a lot of enthusiastic people, but maybe not really capable of pointing it in the right direction, because it's quite a tough job to do. It's a pretty, we are demanding a lot of our team. So that's also the reason why we have now attracted someone who have been managing the Dutch Federation in rowing, performed in the Olympics, managed a big performance team already. And that create that we have more spare time as well.
Cool. Very cool insights.
Yeah, super cool. And let me just share some thoughts on this. As we are a leadership podcast, you just mentioned, okay, you're still learning a lot every day, and you're looking around where you can bring value to the team. Where's your position? I think that's so great to hear that the founder, the owner, the manager of such an amazing project sits here together with us and telling us, well, I'm still learning. I try to look where I can bring value instead of pretending that you know everything and that everyone just needs to follow Bas Tietema's ideas. Thank you very much for being very open on that. That's really great, really impressive.
Yeah, and I think it's also normal if you haven't done it before. It's like any other sport, you need to train. I think that's where it all started. You need to train to be good at something. And I must say, my father has a background as an entrepreneurial background as well. He ran the franchise company. So of course, I learned already from a young age what it is to be on the road and to try to make something a success. I've done 1 year university as well, but then I also learned for myself, this is not the way how I would like to learn stuff, because sitting in classroom is not the way how I get motivated and triggered. But this is for myself, the unique case to learn as much as I want. And I think the most grateful moments are the moments that it doesn't feel like work, because it's our life project, but that we also created something that we can learn so much as founders that for later on. Is if it's network, if it's competition, if it's, yeah, it's really valuable. Maybe we don't appreciate it too much or like not often enough, but I think it's nice that we created something ourselves that keeps us learning day to day.
Continuous learning is hopefully something that is part of daily life for many organizations. Bas, I would like to go a little bit more in team spirit again, and would really talk about the team spirit among the riders. And I have a challenging question. But let me tell you, in one of our last episodes, we had a guest was Andy Korb, so a professional mountain bike downhill racer. He's also surrounded by a highly professional team. He has all the coaches, physiotherapists, mechanics, many others. But at the end, once the race starts, it's just him on the track. And in the end, he alone wins or loses. And in my understanding, in road cycling, it's very different. It means the success depends on the team working together throughout the entire race. And still, there might be only one or two riders that can be the star. Only one goes to win the sprint. Only one goes to win the general classification. And all the other guys somehow commit to really fully supporting that guy. So what I'm saying, most riders have this supporting role. And I'm just interested, what does that do to the vibe, to the culture of the team, to the team dynamics? Do you need to motivate riders with such a supportive role? I mean, please help me to understand.
Yeah, I think it's key of a successful cycling team. And I think the sport of cycling is really complex, because you're participating in a race as a team. you are riding in the same jersey, you are at the same team. But in the end, there's only one guy at the podium. And there is a lot of team dynamics involved, but you can win races if you are just alone and super good. For example, Pogacar, the one who is phenomenal, of course, he needs the team and chances will reduce if you don't have the team around him. But he could be still capable of winning a lot of races, even if you participate alone in a race. And I think there it's key to make everyone part of a plan. And in a team, you have 30 riders. Well, only 7 or 8 of those are riding the Tour de France. And everyone wants to race the bigger races. And I think it all starts there with what is your role within the team and what are your aspirations as a rider and an athlete? Because you can aim for being the big star rider, but if you don't perform, then your career is maybe over. And you have a lot of riders as well that understand that they are maybe not the best physical riders on the planet, but that they have certain abilities, or they can be a really good team player. They have a lot of insights in tactics, and they try to strengthen that specific area or that specific physical ability to make it as a long professional career in pro cycling. And I think it's up to any team to create a chemistry between those top star riders that can bring you the media value, the wins, the victories, but also having a clear and a certain role for everyone else within the organization. And that's maybe not even only the riders, but even the mechanics and the soigneurs who are working on day to day, or like from early mornings, late evenings, what is their role in that victory? And I think that's also up to the leaders. They get paid for that responsibility. So not everyone is equal, but they have to treat everyone as an equally important person within the organization, because everyone has a role in that success. And I think it's key to make sure that is as best as you can, because there's always friction because it's sports and everyone is aiming to do better. So there will always be friction, but to manage that in a certain way is crucial to have a good dynamic within the team. But I must say it's really complex, because in football, you win together, you lose together. In cycling, you can have a rider who is really feeling shit after a race while another one won the race. So,
Yeah, very, very good description about all the dynamics. And thank you also for involving the back office staff, let's put it that way. So the mechanics, the physiotherapists and so on, who are equally important, but will never be highlighted in any racing report. Maybe in your YouTube channel.
How do you guys look to the sport? Because it's a team sport, but how, like with your background and talking about leadership, how do you see that as maybe a more outside or like someone who's looking from the sport with a different perspective? Mm.
I mean, honestly, I think you described it quite well, that you really have different roles, different responsibilities, different capabilities. Not everybody can be the superstar, but still can contribute to a successful team. And if you manage, no matter if in a sports team or in a company, that everyone understands what is my contribution to success, then I think you have created something which is outstanding. Torsten, I sent you a nice picture of a quote that I found that is, I'm just looking, the greatest gift of leadership is building a team that wants each other to win. Right. I had to Google this. It's from John Gordon. Honestly, I didn't know that guy, leadership expert right. from US. But actually, I think that's a quite nice summary. If people are really working their ass off for each other, then you won.
Yeah, and of course, also in our professional world, we have so many different roles. We had an episode together with Philip Binder, a guy now living in Canada, describing very good the different roles you have. The engineer who doesn't want to be put in the front light, in the spotlight. He loves to do stuff at his computer. And then you have the sales manager who always wants to get the credits for each and every deal that was signed. And so you have many different roles. You also have those support roles. But the success of a company really depends on if all those people work together, support each other, know about the role, know about how important this role is. And that's something we are discussing all the time when we set up account teams for managing large customer accounts. So it's not only the account manager, it's the technical sales support, it's people from operations. You need to make orders going smoothly through your organization and so on. So I think it's very comparable. And you also have to understand the dynamics. You also have to give credits to those people who are not always in the spotlight. And the leadership is very much involved in this. And it's really the leader who has a very important role to understand these dynamics, understand certain roles, understanding different personalities. And that would be also one of my questions for today. How would you describe your leadership style? Have you ever thought about it in the way you developed?
I think I'm becoming more conscious about my role, because for me it's because my age, and I think age is still also, it don't have to be a factor in leadership, but the riders in the team or people around are mostly older or the same age as we are. And I wasn't always aware of what my behavior or what my role within the team has, what kind of influence that have on other people. And I think right now, and also with the team becoming bigger and bigger, I understand more and more that, giving that compliment to a specific person or understanding if someone is struggling with what he is doing, what my role as an ambassador and founder as a team, because I'm not the one who is the direct contact person or the one who is managing the guy, but I can really help someone or give him a good feeling. And I think that's something I'm more aware of right now. So that's also something that I'm really trying to do better every day, to take that role and support them as much as I can from my perspective and from my role as a founder. Sometimes hard decisions need to be made as well, because we are also in a really competitive environment. But I think on a personal level and from that side, that's where I try to take my leadership as founder of, and also as the one who started this whole journey. I think that's also my responsibility. So,
talking responsibility is an extra question, because I can imagine, I mean, you started from scratch. It was basically all yours with another two guys, if I understood. And now all of a sudden you have 100 people and you need to give responsibility to those people. How are you doing with that? How are you dealing with that? Is easy to give responsibility that has been yours to others?
Yeah, I believe the responsibility goes two ways. One, the responsibility for me and for us, that you have 100 people making an income and having a job or in this organization. And in the first years, I also believe that it's a huge opportunity for a lot of people as well. It's a decision people can make to get into this organization. If you want to have more security, or like if you have other values, or if you are looking for other aspects, maybe a sports organization is not the best organization if you are looking for that, because you are a lot on the road. There's a lot of pressure as well involved, mostly not the best paid jobs as well. But I believe that the opportunity was there with this project to grow really fast, and it's a unique project in the sport, and it's also up to them to go for that, yes or no. And I think it was resulting something pretty nice, but that gave me some relaxing feeling because it's also up to them to make that decision as well. And in the other hand, responsibility. I'm more and more relaxed in letting it go while seeing it. So I have my phone and I have there the notes, and I'm now capable of writing it down and giving the feedback and to the right people at the right moment, not in the emotion. So that's my way of coping with, if I see things not happen, not going my way, but important enough to mention to the people who need to deal with the responsibility.
Cool. Amazing.
Again, quite some learnings over this very short, very fast, very exciting journey. It's really great. I mean, it's only a few years where you have accumulated lots of experience about so many things which are crucial to becoming an entrepreneur, and which just happened out of more or less nothing. So thank you very much for super valuable insights into your own learning process and your own personal development. I think that's great.
Thank you. And thank you for being in this podcast and also thinking about this whole process that we have been through. Yeah. Yes.
We are not done yet, Bas. It's going to be two more challenging questions.
Right. It's always hard to introduce those questions, but those are the most or potentially most interesting ones, because our hope is always to get some really, really nice stories out of this. Sometimes this works out and sometimes not. So my last question to you, looking back into your career as an entrepreneur, maybe starting with your YouTube channel, what's your biggest fail so far? What situation did you really fuck up tremendously where you said, well, how the hell could that happen?
Whew. I think the biggest fuck up for myself is that I believe that people think the same way as we do as entrepreneurs. And giving responsibility is needed, but if you give responsibility to people who are not capable of not willing to take that responsibility, then you only find out way much later. And then I think that's because we gave a lot of people opportunities, and I think that's the core of our organization to give a lot of young and talented people a chance within an organization to show what they are capable of and unique. But I think we also learned that in some phase you also need experience as well. And then maybe you are hoping that it works out, but then you also need to follow your heart. And if it's not feeling right, then you should probably already made a decision earlier instead of hoping that it will happen later. So it's not one big fuck up, but it's a big lesson for me that if it's not feeling the right way, then you should follow the guts. And yeah, it's mostly it's the best way to do.
I think that's a learning that most of us share being an entrepreneur.
I fully agree. Yeah, I fully agree. And we all made the same mistake.
Yeah, and it's also a really different to hire people. Right. It's different than most of the time, the specialist or the expert becomes the best expert, and then he is the head of the expert. But is he capable of managing the other experts as well? And I think that's
absolutely,
especially for with us growing so fast that the first hired people are becoming the more senior or managing people. But is that working after a few years as well? Do you have then the best people at the right place and the right spots? And then evaluating that, and then maybe coming back to your decision is a tough thing to do, because I think a lot of people are aiming to become a manager and see that as something, as a step in hierarchy or in status. But I believe that if you are good at doing something, even if it's an expert role, that can be way more valuable. And I think one of our founders, Devin, he is the expert in storytelling, and you don't need to manage him. And I think it's super clear that's how he brings added value to the company. And we try to bring him in different roles within the media team as a managing, or trying to manage or to work together with other creative people. But in the end, he can tell our main story, and that story is so valuable for what we are doing. So yeah, sometimes it's the best to have people in an expert or a specialist role where they are the best at.
That seems to be a universal truth, that the best expert might not be the best leader.
Definitely. Right. I've done that mistake a few times.
We all did it.
I was already hoping that I wasn't the only one. If you open the most leadership or books about entrepreneurial stories, then this is mostly one of the lessons coming back.
Yes. True. Coming from the biggest fail to the biggest success. And I wouldn't call this the story you told a fail. It's basically a huge learning and a very, very relevant one. But my last question is about your biggest success. And I'm always saying success can look very different depending on where you stand and what your values are. It's money, it's trophies, it's growth, it's culture. So looking back at everything you built so far, Bas, what would you describe as your biggest success and why?
I would describe my biggest success to keep following our dreams and ambitions we had. Because when we started the YouTube channel, not a lot of people would say, okay, that's a good idea to do because you don't have a business plan. Why should you go to France to film the Tour de France? What's the ultimate goal? And then when we had the successful YouTube channel, everyone said, stick to making YouTube videos. You are having there a really good business model. A lot of people are watching. And we started a cycling team. And a lot of partners back in the days were saying, a cycling team brings you so many problems. And then we also mentioned that we wanted to ride the Tour de France. Nobody gave us any shot. And now people are asking us, when are you guys riding the Tour de France? And I think that's the biggest compliment and also the biggest reminder that if we believe in something, and that could be also our next step, that even when a lot of people could say, why? Or why should you do that? That if the three of us or like people close by and we believe in that concept, that we should follow our heart. And I think that's something we did over the past that brought us a lot of success. And when more and more people get involved, everyone has an opinion. And I think that's everyone's right to give that opinion. But in the end, I think it's also up to make the right decisions, even when everyone else is not believing in those decisions or choices you make, that you keep committed to who you are and your plans and your ambitions. And I think we did that. So that's my biggest success, I would say.
Cool. That was a very nice closing story, I would say. Bas, it was amazing to have you in the show. Really, really so valuable insights. And I really do hope we're going to see you guys competing at the Tour de France this year. So I would love to. And probably in 2-3 years, you're going to bring the yellow jersey home, right?
I hope so. And I think also... And also for the people who don't know the story yet, you can also go back to YouTube and watch the first episode as well to have a bit more context about this whole podcast, because I can imagine it's we are now talking 1 hour about this whole story, but it's quite a story to understand as well. So there is a lot of context that you could dive into if you want to.
Yeah, and you definitely should. And if you and your team are riding the Tour of the Alps, maybe, and you will see two super crazy guys close to the road, that's most probably Peter and myself.
Yeah, really good. Really good. And otherwise, hopefully in France in the summer, that would be nice as well. So
I will check my calendar. That's always worth traveling and seeing you guys compete there would be even more exciting. Hey, thank you very much. Thanks for taking your time. Thanks for being available during season preparation time. And thanks for super valuable insights, Bas.
Thank you for the invite.
Thank you, Bas.
Talk to you soon. Hey, bye.